What's up there, good peoples? Cameron Northfleet, Century 21, All Points Realty. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to hear what I've got to say. If you have not done so already, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. That way you will get notified any and every time I upload a new episode. Also, be sure to leave a rating and or a review. That just helps me out so that the platform that you're listening to this on shares my content with more people. So if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or any other podcasting platform, if you can leave a rating and or a review, that'd be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure that you are following me on my other social media channels. Facebook is facebook.com/theinvestorrealtor, or you can just type in Cameron Northfleet, the investor realtor. Instagram is just at Cameron Northfleet, and YouTube is youtube.com/Cameron Northfleet. All right, so today we have Mr. Mark Abramovich, aka Mark the Lender, and we are talking about hard money loans. So if you are in the market to purchase a property in need of some work and your traditional bank either turns you away or you already know that they're probably not going to hear it, your alternative would be a gentleman like Mark the Lender. There's a lot of great information in this episode here. We talked about what will be needed to qualify for this type of loan, the terms and details of these loans, and things of that nature. So whether you are new to investing or you're in search of a new lender here in the state of Connecticut, Mark might be the guy for you. All right. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. Mark the Lender, how are you today? Thank you for joining the show.
I'm very good, Cameron. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Awesome. Tell us, who are you? What do you do? And how did you get into it?
I am a lender. I don't break it down to private or hard. As a good friend of mine says, the moment somebody starts advertising, they're not really private anymore.
Right, gotcha.
How did I get into it? I joined an organization called Fortune Builders, which is a real estate education company, and found myself leaning more towards the deal analysis and funding for them. And I own rentals. I own a property management company in Connecticut called Idani Management. We're happy to manage for landlords and give them a passive path. At the same time, my personal preference lies with lending. So that's what I got into.
Cool. So you have a property management branch. So how many properties are you managing? How's that side of the business look for you?
We have currently over 110 doors under management.
Cool. Whereabouts?
Predominantly Bridgeport, Connecticut, but also the surrounding areas, and we're growing.
Cool, cool. And you're looking to expand more so out of the Bridgeport area, New Haven, even up towards like the Hartford area, or is that kind of going a little far for you?
I think it's a little far, but definitely towards the Stamford area and around.
Nice.
At some point, perhaps all of Connecticut. But for now, that's the area which Bridgeport's the area where we started and we're more focused.
Awesome. Awesome. And so your main business is lending.
Yes, that is correct.
And you are a private money lender, a hard money lender. What exactly do you do?
Lender.
You're a lender. Gotcha.
I'm a lender.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Different options available. Most of the time I have capital partners that work with me. I have private capital that I have raised, and literally it's my own money out of my bank account and my IRA sometimes. And so it depends.
Okay.
But I lend hard style. And by that, what I mean is we'll do underwriting. We'll do an appraisal. We review each deal the same way as anything else, right? Whether I know you or I don't, I still want to know what's going on in your life. What are you doing with the project? What is it worth? So the way of lending is the same, whether it's someone I know or a complete stranger.
Right. So now you you do a little bit of both, a little bit of private money lending, a little bit of hard money lending. What exactly is the difference between the two?
I think it's mostly in the terms and how expedient it can be,
okay.
Right? When you're dealing with somebody, in the end run, lending is lending, okay? This is something I think people miss. whether it's grandma that's lending you the money or whether it's a professional lender, in the end run, it's terms and conditions, right? There's some amount of interest that's going to be paid, some property that's going to act as collateral, and that's the process. Now, whether grandma is going to ask for an appraisal or if she's going to take your word for the after repair value, that's a little bit different between me and grandma, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask for an appraisal unless the property is somewhere local where I can actually walk to it and take a look personally. But I have systems set up. I have a process set up. I will do an appraisal. I will pull back, you know, a credit and background report. Grandma doesn't necessarily. Grandma's happy with, oh, it's okay, grandson. You know, you don't need to give me a promissory note and a personal guarantee. That doesn't work with me. So the difference is terms and conditions, right? Private lenders are people that you know personally. They're your friends and family. Private lenders are people who are lending to you because they know you. They can quantify your 20 past years of friendship, right? What kind of person you are. Since I don't have that relationship with some of my borrowers, with some of my clients, I have to follow a process, right? I can't quantify, 20 years of friendship that doesn't exist with someone. Now, if one of my friends whom I have known for 20 years comes to me and says, Mark, I want to do a flip. All right, let's talk private money.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure that depends on who the friend is.
Absolutely. Well, if I call them a friend, that already sets up a certain criteria.
Very true. Nice. Do hard money lenders lend on, or do you lend on owner-occupied properties or just investment properties?
Nope. No. It's commercial loans. That's the point. Specifically on our paperwork, it clearly states that the owner will not occupy this property.
Right.
Now, after the renovation, so for example, there are scenarios where people will renovate a property and then they decide to live in it, which is perfectly fine. You refinance the loan and you're welcome to move into it afterwards after we've been paid off.
Nice. And how are hard money lenders regulated? Is it regulated the same as a bank? How does that work?
Depends on the state, actually. Very much depends on the state. Some states have no regulations and you're able to do it just fine. It's commercial. It's a business-to-business loan. While other states actually will require real estate agent licenses as well as mortgage loan originator licenses. So the same mortgage loan originator license that's required for consumer loans, right? Regular mortgages on homesteads, some states will require the lender to have it even for hard money loans. I don't necessarily do business in those states.
Gotcha. Where do the funds come from? You mentioned that you that you put in some of your money. You mm-hmm. have some investors. Mm-hmm. In general, like how does hard money work? Is it generally, all the capital from that particular business? Do they raise capital? How does that work?
Different places. And the way it works, the bigger question that people can ask, not that it should matter to the borrower, right, but the bigger question is who actually holds the loan during the term, right? So think of it as a bank, right, with a mortgage. So when a bank issues a mortgage, some banks will actually hold the note. Mm-hmm. Meaning you borrow from a local bank like Webster Bank, let's say, right? So in our area in New York, Connecticut, they're a great bank to work with. I personally do my banking with them. So Webster Bank, for example, will hold the mortgage. So some of my rental properties are mortgaged with them. They don't sell the loan. They actually hold it. So mm-hmm. the 25-year term that I have with them, essentially, for 25 years, Webster Bank will hold that loan. I'm making my payments to them. On the other hand, for example, when I bought my house that I live in, I got the mortgage from Chase Bank, or no, I got it from, I think I forget who I got it from, but basically the mortgage broker that I got it through, pretty much the day after closing, sold it off. And I ended up being a client of Chase. Then Chase repackaged it and sold it to somebody else. So my loan was held by somebody else. Not that it mattered to me. In the end run, I knew where to send my payments and I made my payments. The same thing with hard money. The question comes up, who is actually going to hold the loan? So at times, Mears Group actually will hold the note. I lend and you're making payments to Mears Group the whole time. Sometimes I have capital partners, funds that will purchase that loan. So the funds are coming from them. You know, I do all of the work. But even in that case, I don't go away. I don't disappear into the sunset saying, hey, now you go deal with them. No, the client is always mine. They'll come back to me for the loan. I will be there to answer any questions. So I'm there to originate that loan. I'm there to, you know, throughout the process of the loan, if there are any questions or issues, and I'm there for the next loan.
What type of properties do hard money lenders lend on? Is it, you know, just residential, commercial as well, office space? Like what type of, everything.
Everything. Okay. The easy answer is everything. But just like anything else in life, we specialize. So my forte and my specialty is fix and flips for basically residential properties, as well as rentals for 1 to 4 units. So the easy answer is hard money lenders will lend on anything and everything, but there are companies that specialize in different things.
Gotcha.
You know, the guys who are dealing with large storage unit facilities, that's their niche. That's their specialty. That's not mine. And it's okay, right? You know, pro athletes, for example, will play a sport, right? All sports are sports, but then they specialize in some particular sport that they're the, you know, they're the champions in. Same thing here.
What are the benefits of working with a hard money lender over like a regular bank?
Well, banks actually don't like fix and flips. Let's just start there. Banks don't like the risk. A bank wants to lend on a property that's already finished with a borrower that's stable, and that's their business practice, right? So think of what a bank will finance, right? A person is buying a house, right? Which means at this point, the house is ready to move into. The borrower has a job and a stable income, and that's when the bank is happy to come in and lend basically as much as the person wants, right? Now, where does hard money fit in? We fit in that riskier space of the property is not livable. Somebody's going to take this unlivable, uninhabitable property, fix it, and then sell it, you know, once it's ready to go. So it's a much riskier proposition. That's why it's a higher interest rate. There are higher fees. There's more risk involved. But at the same time, you know, we're there for that space. That's our niche, right? That's what hard money is for. In terms of rental properties, there's a difference because for rental properties, banks don't typically like LLCs. Credit unions do. Banks don't necessarily like them. So, and when banks will lend on an LLC, right now they're actually looking for, they're adding on to the interest rate as well. Now, the other part that banks and credit unions do is they will actually underwrite the borrower, right? So there's the property itself has to be able to sustain the loan. And then on top of it, right, banks and credit unions want the borrower themselves able to sustain the loan in case the property, something happens to the property, right? So you have a rental property, a person's living in it, renting it, paying rent. But now, let's say they're not paying rent for whatever reason, loss of job, or let's say they move out and the property is vacant. The bank wants the borrower able to sustain the loan during that time. So a bank and a credit union will look at people's income statements, W-2s, right? That stuff. Hard money, again, is more comfortable in this riskier space. So we will look at the asset Now, we still want the personal guarantee from the borrower, and we're still going to look at their credit score to make sure they're, you know, knowledgeable about how to handle their finances, but we don't look at income statements. So we're gotcha. Basing our loan amount on the performance of the property. So we may lend a little bit less than a bank, but at the same time, for a professional investor who doesn't necessarily have a steady income stream, right, a W-2 that consistently pays out, let's say a residential redeveloper, right, a flipper, somebody who buys a property, works on it for 6 months, sells it, gets a big paycheck, and then repeats. They don't necessarily have that stable income stream coming. So a bank might not necessarily want to finance a property for them because they're not a stable client. Yep. In our case, we're just fine with it. As long as the person has the reserves necessary to pay for their mortgage payments, insurance and taxes, we're just fine with it. So that's the split between banks and credit unions on the one side and hard money. It's a question of what risk we're all willing to take and what we're able to provide. In case of fix and flip, banks don't really operate in that space at all. It's not their forte. They don't want that risk. We do.
Right. What type of documentation and all that stuff are you looking for from the borrower?
So we're looking for their corporate docs, right? In the end run, the borrower technically is the company, and it's the company is the borrower, while the individual person is the personal guarantor on the loan, right? So what we're looking for is articles of organization, operating agreement, and EIN letter for the company. We're gotcha. Looking for, we're going to run background and credit checks on the borrower themselves. We're looking for an Excel spreadsheet, basically, that the person fills out as their portfolio, right? Their experience portfolio, flips done, rentals owned. You know, the joke I make is, you know, when somebody tells me, well, I don't have any flipping experience, but I own rentals, and I tell them it's like dog years.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. So,
what else? We're looking, obviously, for IDs, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, bank statements. So when we ask for bank statements or assets, what we're looking for is, again, it's not so much to pry, but I want to know that someone can perform when the day comes to close. I need right. to know that the person has the money for the down payment. I need to know that they have the money for the closing costs, whatever is available. And then we also want to see that once we close, they have the money necessary to start work on the project. Since we reimburse renovation funds, we don't advance them. So I need to know that the borrower can actually start work once we close, that they're not okay. completely tapped out.
I don't want to forget to ask you that. You said mm-hmm. that you reimburse renovation
correct.
And you don't advance them. So mm-hmm. so basically I would have to come up with all the funds to no, renovate the property?
Not okay. all of them. The way it works okay. is, let's use an example. The renovation is going to cost $50,000. Mm-hmm. Okay. We will provide all $50,000, but we will provide it in reimbursements, which means, let's say you have $10,000 worth of work done, you request a draw, we send an inspector to inspect the property, make sure that the work has been completed, they report back to us that it has been completed, and we reimburse that $10,000, and the process keeps repeating. Now, gotcha. how you're providing that $10,000 is really up to you. We want to see, let's say, right? So we want to see that you have some money to start work. Let's say 10% of the renovation fund. So of $50,000, it would be $5,000, right? $5,000. That doesn't mean you can only get $5,000 worth of work done. So, and I tell this to people, that you can negotiate with the contractor, and it's whatever you can work out with them. You can, you know, if your contractor says, look, no matter what, I need you to pay me the moment I'm done, that's your negotiation with them, then that means you have to float the money and pay it to them. On the other hand, you can tell the contractor that, hey, when you're going to be done, I'm going to, I need to make a request to my hard money lender for the draw, which means my hard money lender will send an inspector, so that if that inspector says you're not done, mm-hmm. I can't pay you. Use right. me, and I tell people, use me as the bad guy.
Right.
Right. And that's it. That keeps the contractor, you know, on track and on their toes, because the renovation budget, right, the rehab list is the same one. Initially, I'm provided it for the appraisal. And then afterwards, our inspector is using it to check off what's been completed. And I tell people, it's better to have it set up where it's done, not done, instead of debating, well, we're 50% done on this, we're 60% done on that. That's where discrepancies come in.
Right. Okay. So now my renovation is going to cost me $50,000. And you do what, five draws total?
You can do as many draws as you want.
Okay.
So there's a $200 draw fee. Typically, there's a $200 draw fee, okay? You know, up front, I let you know what it is. No, I'll explain. If the project is somewhere near my house, literally where I physically live, this is the question of private money, right?
Right.
This is what you asked me. If it's an investor I already know who lives literally down the street and he's doing a project 5 minutes away, and I can physically visit the project, do I need to charge a $200 draw fee? No.
Gotcha.
Right. But that's something that I will let them know up front. So there's a $200 draw fee to pay for the inspector to come out to the property.
Gotcha.
Right? So I don't mind you drawing for, you know, $1,000, but it's going to get very expensive. On the other hand, so you can draw $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. It's whatever you can float to pay your contractor. At the same time, I have had scenarios where borrowers don't ever draw the renovation funds. They didn't want to pay the interest on it. The total renovation budget was $30,000. They simply finished it, paid for it out of pocket, sold the property, paid us back for the money they borrowed for the purchase, and that was the end. Mm. I do want to get back to something else. I mean, I'll happily continue talking about renovations, but I wanted to get back to something you asked me about. What is the benefit of working? And I'm not going to say hard money lender, but I'm going to say a professional lender. What is the benefit? The pocket runs deep. That's number one. I don't run out of money. Okay.
Gotcha.
Regardless of whether it's my account or whether it's capital partners, there will be something. I'll be able to provide something. That's number one. Number two, and I think even more importantly, you have someone who's a professional looking over your project to make sure that it makes sense. I have had people submit deals where I don't know if they had an error on their Excel spreadsheet where they were calculating it. I don't know if they simply were too lazy and didn't calculate it at all. But they will submit a deal that's a negative deal. At the end of the day, they lose money. Sometimes people are beginners. They miss costs and fees that they're going to incur, right? There's a cost to selling the property that the realtor will charge, right? You don't have to bring it to the deal, but when you're selling, that's anywhere between 3% and 6% that has to be accounted for. There's a cost of financing, right? Money costs something. It's a tool, but it's a tool that I charge for, right? It still costs something. Even if it's grandma that's providing the money at 5%, that's still 5% that needs to be accounted for in the project. Mm. So those costs need to be accounted for. So the benefit of a professional lender is that we will actually review the deal. We will make sure that the deal actually makes sense. And honestly, there are deals I've passed up that were too slim. And I tell people they're too slim. Look, I can lend on it, but I don't necessarily want to lend on it because I know that very quickly I will be, you know, you're going to be losing money and I'm essentially reaching into your pocket. I don't want to do such a deal. I want the win-win. I want, when the project is done, I want to be paid. I want you to be paid and for both of us to happily do the next project together.
Right. Have you had borrowers to end up not being able to refinance out of the loan at the end?
So predominantly, it's not a refinance at the end. Predominantly, borrowers will sell the properties. So I've had unfortunate instances where, you know, the project was held a little bit too long, and by the time they were selling it at a loss. I've had, you know, borrowers disappear on me, and I have to track them down and foreclose on properties. It's a very unpleasant scenario, and I'm not a fan of it. I enjoy doing business with people who I consider friends.
Right.
So, but yes, it happens.
Yeah.
like and so, anything so, else.
Yeah, yeah. It's now hard money is not cheap, right? What typically, you know, I mean, I know you're not giving it a quote or estimate or mm-hmm. what have you, but what do we look at typically generally for a for hard money loan as far as interest rates and points and fees and this, that, and the other?
So typically interest, okay, it's a range. So by the way, one of the things I do provide when somebody approaches me for a loan is a quote that does actually give them a full breakdown of what they are going to need. Gotcha. Some things I do estimate, right? I don't know exactly how much title will cost. I don't necessarily know exactly how much their attorney is going to charge, but I know my costs and I know roughly what insurance should cost. So I give a full estimate of what they can expect to pay. Okay, so that is something that people will get with me. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a range. Typically, a beginner is looking at 12.5% to start, and interest will come down as experience goes up. A lot of people like, you know, unfortunately, you know, everybody's going to fixate on the 12.5% I just said, but it's okay. And this is why lenders will say rates as low as, and then they omit how to get to that low as point. Right. Okay. Right. I start the other way. I'm very upfront and blunt about it. A beginner mm-hmm. can look at about 12.5%. Experience goes up, interest goes down. Points, we typically charge 2.5 points. It goes to pay for all of the people who are working on the loan to review it, to do all the work that's necessary for that loan to close it. So that's what the points go to pay. We typically have a $995 legal fee to our attorney who drafts up the documents and reviews it. There's about $250 of miscellaneous garbage. I mean, it's necessary stuff, okay? But it's the little minutia that you see and people don't necessarily mention it. Again, I mention it. Things like wiring funds to the closing, running a credit and background check. All of that little stuff adds up to about $250. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less. That's our fees. A person can expect to pay for an appraisal, but they're paying it directly to the appraiser for whatever they quote. People can expect to pay for insurance. Again, it's whatever their insurance agent charges them, right? We require insurance on the property, but it's something you would pay for with anyone. Right. Same thing with title and recording fees. They're not my costs. They're costs with anybody on a real estate transaction. So with us specifically, people can expect to pay, let's say 12.5% and lower based on experience and 2.5 points, $995 legal and $250 of miscellaneous fees.
So like, are there any application fees just to get the process started?
Nope. We don't charge them. We don't have them. I laugh and I tell people if they would like, I can charge a fee, but...
No, rather not. how long are the terms generally for like a fix and flip?
Generally they're for 12 months. 12 extensions months. Are available. They cost, but typically the term is for 12 months. And on a regular fix and flip, we will know upfront, right? It depends on the amount of the renovation, how long mm-hmm. the term. The term is 12 months. You're welcome to pay us off, you know, to pay back the loan earlier. There's no issue with it.
And you pay prepayment penalties?
No.
Okay.
So it's in your best interest to pay us as quickly as possible. At the same time, day one, right? If I'm seeing a renovation budget of $200,000, I know you're not getting it done in 3 months. Mm. Okay. And what a lot of people will forget also when they're looking at holding times is there's the time to get the project done, and then there's the time to sell that house, to sell that project, or refinance it, whatever it is. And what people will forget is that during that time, interest is still being paid. So it has to be part of the calculation, right? Just because you're done with the project does not mean that you've stopped paying and doesn't mean that you've gotten rid of the property. Right. So
they still have your money. So
correct. And they still need to find a buyer. Now, I understand in this, it's a really wacky scenario right now with what's going on in the world. The fact that properties, whenever they're available, just fly off the shelf. I mean, it's gone.
Yeah,
but still, for a buyer to obtain a mortgage is still anywhere between 30 and 60 days, depending on where they are, what state. So even after the project is done, there's about 2 months of holding time. And if that buyer falls through for whatever reason, now you have to find a new one and repeat the process. So that can extend.
Right. And do you prefer lending to like an entity, LLC, trust, or what have you, or to an individual person?
Not specifically who we lend to. We're lending to entities. It's a business-to-business loan. It's a commercial loan.
How long does it take to fund a deal on average?
Appraisal plus 5 business days.
I like the way you put that. Gotcha.
You know, how fast can I fund? I can fund, you know, the truest answer really is appraisal plus 5 business days. I mean, obviously, if there's an issue with title, that will also extend time.
Of course.
But usually the biggest pain point, and you can tell by my focusing on it now, the biggest pain point is the appraisal. Mm. They're third-party individuals. You know, people will sometimes say, my lender blew up my appraisal. We don't blow up anything. Actually, the appraisal is done by a third party. I don't actually know who the appraiser is until I get the report. It's an arm's length transaction, right? I have the appraiser is not biased by me. The appraiser is not biased by the borrower. Right. They're a complete third party that gets the purchase agreement. They get the repair estimate. This is where I tell people the more detail you can put in, the better it is. And I also suggest that you meet them at the property, walk through with them, and tell them what you're going to be doing. Okay, the more detail, the better. The better the results on the ARV will be. You don't want the appraiser guessing at the finishes in the kitchen. You don't want them guessing, are you putting in a Viking stove or are you putting in a little hot plate? You want them to know that clearly in your repair estimate, walking the property with them. So the appraisal, it really is the biggest challenge, right? Because it's a third party. They're doing what they're doing. They schedule for when they can. They come in. I can't force them to give me the appraisal any sooner than they're going to. But once I have it, we go into underwriting, which typically takes 3 business days, and then we schedule a closing, another 2 days.
So at the end of the 12 months, you said that there's an extension. I've spoken to a few people that are kind of afraid of hard money lenders. You know, a lot of people actually see hard money lenders as no different than a loan shark. So
terrible, you know, name. I know.
You know. So yeah. I mean, like what happens with the? I mean, does somebody get their legs broken? What happens? God, no.
There are so many jokes I can get into with this, but no. So let's first clear up why it's called hard money. Yep. Because it's backed by a hard asset.
Gotcha.
So a much softer name for it would be commercial loans. Mm. We're commercial lenders.
Gotcha.
So the property is backed by a hard asset, right? By a piece of collateral, that hard piece of real estate. That's why it's a hard loan. Okay? The hard asset loan.
Gotcha. Yep.
Now, what happens? So being that piece of property is the collateral, in case the loan is not paid back, we will foreclose on it, we will repossess it, and then we will sell it to recoup our money. Gotcha. This is also why, so knowing that there's a potential for this and knowing that there will be legal fees and disposition fees, this is typically why lenders will want some, you know, they don't provide 100% of the purchase price and the renovation costs. They leave a little room for that just in case, right? So typical terms borrowers can expect are 70 to 90% of purchase, 100% of renovation, right? And up to 65 to 75% of after repair value. So why is it 70 to 90% of purchase? Why isn't it 100? Well, because if that property needs to be foreclosed on, that piece goes to cover those fees. We don't want anybody to fail. We will do all the due diligence we can up front to make sure it's a successful project. Okay.
Right.
And so to finish answering your question about what happens is in case the project doesn't, you know, the person is not paying the loan, we will foreclose and we will take the property and we will sell it to recover as much as we can. Now, if we recover more than our loan, the remainder will go to the borrower. Hmm. But as you can imagine, our interest is in recovering our money, not trying to sell the property for as much as possible.
For sure.
Okay. So realistically, what happens is the property is foreclosed on, it gets sold. If anything is left over, it goes to the borrower. If nothing is left over, the borrower just lost whatever money they put into this project.
Gotcha.
Not a great scenario.
Yeah, definitely not. You know. Definitely not. So okay. So now, a lot of gurus and everyone tout that hard money is a great way for someone that has no credit or bad credit, no money, no cash, no nothing, and they can purchase property with a hard money loan. Is that true? If it is, then explain. If it's not, please explain.
Let's look at it reasonably.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's just look at it this way. If somebody came to you with no money, no experience, low credit. Now, credit, it's an interesting thing. Credit is a snapshot of where the person is in life. I understand that it's not the be-all and end-all of their life, but it does give a pretty good snapshot of where they are right now, whether they're, you know, and by the way, so let's deal with credit first and I'll answer the question.
Sure thing.
Credit scores. It takes a lot of work for somebody to get to 500. Okay? It doesn't happen on its own. Now, you could get down to the low 600s based on utilization. So a lot of use on credit cards, a lot of utilization of credit, which does happen with a lot of investors who have multiple projects going, right? They're leveraged on all of these different properties. Now, typically, if it's just utilization, but everything is paid on time, we will lend. It's not an issue, right? The person knows what they're doing. They know what to do with their money. Right. At the same time, what we're looking for more diligently on credit reports is past due balances, right? If somebody comes to me and they want to borrow money, especially for a long-term finance of a rental,
right?
Okay. And they're coming to me for that financing and they're not paying a mortgage on their primary house. Do I really want to lend on that?
No. Probably not.
Because if they're not paying there, they're not going to pay me either. So so that's the credit part of it. So let's look at the scenario of somebody with no experience, no money, and low credit coming to borrow. Are they really a safe investment? No.
Probably not.
No. So, and that, by the way, is kind of the tripod, right? That's the stool. That's the three legs to a stool: experience, money, and credit. So if one of those things is limping or missing or weak, if the other two are great, they can cover for it. Somebody that has low credit because of utilization, but they're a highly experienced investor, plus they've got capital to bring to a deal where, you know, credit's already, it's irrelevant. As long as they're paying the bills, right?
Right, right.
Kind of irrelevant. On the other hand, if somebody comes to me, they have fantastic credit. They've got money to bring to the deal, but guess what? They're a completely new investor. Again, we've got two out of the three legs working well. So hard money is not fools, right? We're okay operating in the riskier space, but it has to make sense. From that perspective, you asked me about private money. So what am I willing to do for an investor that I've worked with before? I'll push that purchase LTV. I have loans where I have, you know, partnered with people to fill in that gap in purchase, for example, so that they do end up with 100% of the financing. Why? Because I'm comfortable with them, because they have the experience and I know that they're only doing it because they've got money, but they're doing multiple projects. So they're okay paying me a little bit more to get a little bit more capital and be able to grow a little bit further. But with a complete beginner with zero experience, no knowledge of real estate, with a low credit score, and no money, I'm not taking that risk.
Understood. Absolutely. I hear you. Can someone couple hard money with say they had another private money lender and they're not actually putting money in from their own pocket?
Yes.
Okay.
So yes, they can. And here it becomes a very interesting interesting question, because not all lenders, and we do not allow second position liens behind us. We don't want to deal with it, so we don't allow them at all. There are lenders who will allow a second position lien behind them. Typically, they're more expensive, right? Mm-hmm. They have to deal with, they have the potential, again, the risk increases. There's a potential for more issues in case of foreclosure. Now they have to deal with that second position lender. What happens? So they will charge more because of it, right? So that's one option, a second position lien. The other option that I suggest is for people when they have that private money coming in, partner. Have a joint venture agreement, partner in one LLC. So we're lending to an LLC, okay? We're not lending to an individual, we're lending to an LLC. Now in that LLC, you can have multiple members.
Right.
So you can have the majority member, that's 90%. They're the person doing the project. They're the experienced investor and they're the actual guarantor on the loan. Now, let's say they don't have enough cash. Again, they're leveraged. They are doing multiple projects, or they simply want their family to participate and enjoy this opportunity with them. So they go to their family member and they say, listen, I'm doing this loan. I'm going to need $100,000 out of pocket for this loan. Hey, are you willing to participate with me 50-50? I put up 50K, you're putting up 50K. And the person says, yes, I am. I'm interested, I'm willing. Well, the question is, how do you secure them, right? No second position liens. Well, right. A way to do it is that LLC, the person doing the deal, right? They're the majority investor, takes 90%. The other investor puts in their 50,000 into the LLC, but they're a 10% member.
Gotcha.
So they're not showing up on the loan. They're not guaranteeing it. They're not responsible, but they're now a member of the LLC that actually owns the property. So they're right. directly tied to the property that way. And when the project is done, they have some operating agreement between them as to how the money gets split.
Right.
So, you know, for example, all the money that they put in, you know, earns interest at whatever percentage they agreed to, right? So each of them put in 50,000. So right. each of them should be earning something on their money. And right. then once the money earns interest, so let's say 10 to 15%, right? Great returns. Mm. Just right there, it's a great return. Even 10%, right? Today, banks are paying what? 1.5%, 2% on a CD, right? Mm. The stock market's all over the place and there's no hard asset to back it. So by investing into this opportunity, right? The person's investing into real estate. There's an actual asset to it. As long as the investor knows what they're doing, right? It's mm-hmm. a pretty good deal.
Right.
So they earn their interest. And in the first place, let's say 10 to 15% interest. Then the remaining profit, they can have some kind of participation. So at that point, it could be 90-10, 80-20 to the person who only put in their money gets an extra little bump, right? 10-20% of the net profit. And the person who did the project takes the bulk because they're the ones who did it. But it's awesome. A great deal for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds good. So if someone wanted to know more about you or your business, or if they were looking for a hard money loan, how would they go about contacting you?
Well, the first thing they would do is visit our website. It's www.mearsgroupllc.com. Mears is spelled M as in Mark, I as in Inga, R as in Robert, S as in Sebastian, groupllc.com. They can find our deal forms there. So whether it's a fix and flip or a rental property, they can fill out the form. We'll respond with a letter of interest and a deal summary that shows them the breakdown of what they will need. By the way, that's also the letter of interest is what they can provide to the seller as their proof of funds, right? So we provide a letter of interest saying, hey, as long as the due diligence proves out, we will happily lend on this loan. Here are the terms. So that's a way for people to obtain the proof of funds that they need when a seller asks for it.
And at the time that they are filling out that form and you provide them with a letter of interest, are you doing a credit check at that point? Or are you like what's your determining factor as to whether or not you're going to give them that letter of interest?
So we're collecting the information we're collecting. It, we're providing a quote based on information in, quote out. So if a bar, you know, I will ask for the credit score, I will ask for experience, we will collect the information on the property itself, right? I need to be able to look it up online to see whether it's a rural property or not. We don't lend on rural properties. That's not our thing. There, and again, there are lenders who will, right? It's just not what we do. So we collect such, you know, we collect that information on the deal itself. So I know, for example, for somebody with a 700 credit score, zero experience, right, on this property, we can provide, let's say, 75 to 80% of purchase at 12.5% and 2 points, right? Mm. So I'm giving, that's the information I'm providing based on the information you provided to me. Now, when we actually proceed with a loan, we will do an actual background and credit check. And if I pull credit and somebody told me, look, my credit score is 700 and I pull credit and it turns out to be 650, the terms will change.
Right.
So information in, quote out.
Right.
Now, I would like to mention that people cannot pull your credit without your authorization. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to be very clear. And I know some people aren't cautious with it. And some lenders aren't, not just lenders, some people aren't scrupulous, right? They don't care that they're going to ding somebody's credit. Right. So every time they're doing a quote, well, let me pull your credit. Ding, ding, ding. There's no need. Okay. Not until you're actually doing a loan. I can give you a quote based on the information you provide me. If you're telling me you have 10 experience, I'll provide a quote based on it. Right. Interest rate's going to be somewhere in the nines. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like I said, part of the documentation I'll collect will be an experience portfolio. If I take that experience portfolio, and it turns out that your experience was, well, I painted one of my bedrooms in my own house, and then I rented it out to my friend at $100 a month, mm-hmm. and then I refinanced for a home equity line of credit, that's not three experience right there.
Right.
So based on information in, I give a quote. Once we actually start doing our due diligence, as long as all of the information was accurate, then guess what? You're going to get the exact terms that I've provided.
Awesome.
And that's the way. You do not need to have a property under contract. Okay. Obviously,
right? That's what I was going to ask next.
Well, you sometimes can't get a property under contract without being able to provide a proof of funds.
Right.
Well,
now, is the proof of funds, is that property specific? Should I have a property that I'm looking at? Or is it, you know, can I get your letter of interest and then go shopping for a property?
So, Typically, I would suggest that it's property specific, because this also goes to exactly what you asked me before. What's the benefit of working with me? Well, I look over the project.
Right.
If I just simply give you a generic line of exposure letter, which I do provide to people, right? We do what's known as a soft credit pull. It's only one credit agency. I do have you fill out an authorization to do so. Yeah. And I look at your experience, and I need bank statements to show me how much liquid assets you have available. That's what the line of exposure letter is based on. But again, you've just lost the benefit of my looking over the project.
Right.
You know, you go out there, you miss something in the Excel spreadsheet, you miss something in your analysis, something slipped, okay? And you get the property under contract, and now you're coming to me saying, Mark, let's do it. I've got this property under contract, and I'm looking at it saying, you know, this deal only has $5,000 of profit. What do you mean? Well, what did you put in here? Oh my God, I missed it. Well,
right.
I didn't have a chance to oversee it, right? To review it initially. That's where I would suggest deal specific.
Right. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Listen, well, I definitely appreciate you taking the time to speak to me and my audience today.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. I you're definitely a wealth of knowledge, and
thank you.
Things sound good, man. Sounds good. So, are you on social media? I know you gave some of your contact information.
Yes, I am on Facebook. You can find me under Mark Abramovich on Facebook itself. You can find me on LinkedIn, Mark Abramovich. I think Mears Group LLC. So
awesome.
You can search for us and find us.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So listen, again, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to myself and my audience. For everybody else out there, as always, thank you for your time. Make it a great day.
Have a wonderful day.